workers, aristocrats out to be seen, sports writers, any tennis fans who could take off work on a Tuesday, Queen Mary, her entourage, several members of parliament, and foreign diplomats in the royal box, shift in their seats as Van Kram's serve finally splits the fine membrane between anticipation and fulfillment. The thud of tight catgut strings against ball marks the moment. It is 4:57 p.m. It was another unusually glorious summer day for London. In fact, hardly a drop of rain had fallen all month, and today was cloudless again. The midsummer sun still high, the mercury steadfast in the mid-70s, just as the Times had promised. The weather report, however, was the most uplifting part of the newspaper that morning, and even the weather had to share its page with the obituary of Amelia Earhart. She had been missing for a fortnight, ever since taking off from Lae, Papua New Guinea, for Holland Island, some 2,500 miles off in the Pacific. She'd made it three-quarters of the way through what was to be the first around-the-world flight at the Earth's full circumference. Encountering unexpected headwinds, however, Earhart and her navigator, Fred Noonan, flew for over 20 hours, exhausting their fuel supply without quite reaching the island. President Roosevelt had authorized a $4 million search effort by 9 naval ships and 66 aircraft. But on July 18th, the search was finally abandoned. The front page was no more heartening. Londoners propping their morning Times up against their teacups were presented with a palette of ominous headlines. Bitter fighting near Madrid. Almost exactly a year ago, the fascist General Francisco Franco had led a makeshift rebel army of Moors and foreign legionnaires from Morocco across the Strait of Gibraltar to revolt against the 5-year-old Republican Spanish government. A gruesome civil war had ensued, and a year later there seemed no end in sight. The day's other headlines, China at bay, acute state of tension, and cost of air raid precautions, reminded readers of Japan's ongoing undeclared war against China, a dangerous harbinger of the threat to come from the East, and of the growing recognition that the shockwaves of war could soon rattle the home isle. Foreign Secretary Anthony Eden had given a major speech in the House of Commons yesterday, commenting on all these situations. But although he admitted to the inherently dangerous aspect of certain current configurations, he assured the House that peace would prevail. Putting aside objections to German involvement in the Spanish War, along with Winston Churchill's outrage that huge guns had been mounted outside Gibraltar, Eden praised the Soviet and Nazi government's new naval treaty, as well as the French government's sincere desire for appeasement, both with Germany and in Europe. Rather than bring Europe closer to another cataclysmic war, he reasoned, the Spanish War had shown all responsible people how much more horrible war has become. Winston Churchill sneered, and Labour MP Hugh Dalton considered the government a set of idiotic ostriches, blind to the new technique of aggression practiced by the fascist powers in Spain. If such techniques proved successful there, he argued, they would no doubt soon be applied in Central Europe. Punch drunk from the long-building threat of war, along with 8 months of royal scandal and political battles, London was relieved to turn back to that most reliable of diversions, tennis at Wimbledon. In 1937, the world's most famous and perfectly groomed grass courts, site of the All England Lawn Tennis and Croquet Club, were to host a full month of world-class tennis. First, of course, there were the championships, the tournament known simply as Wimbledon. Then the All England Club would host the Davis Cup, the team competition, formerly known as the International Lawn Tennis Championships. The preliminary rounds to determine the winners of the American Zone and the European Zone had taken place in the spring in Budapest and Berlin, Stockholm and Belgrade, San Francisco and Mexico City, and other cities. The two zone winners, Germany and the United States, were to face off in the inner zone final at Wimbledon to decide who would take on the defending champion. Finally, in the challenge round, the British team would defend the cup against the winning challenger. Great Britain had held the trophy for 3 years. This year, however, it was common knowledge that without three-time Wimbledon champ Fred Perry, who had turned professional and was thus ineligible, Britain stood little chance. The real championship was being contested.